Ah, check. I'm your editor, by the way, so
good.
I'll watch over you.
Don't be nervous.
I have in front of me a rather sharp, wonderful book called Let's Start a Riot, Bruce McCullough, How a Young Drunk Punk Became a Hollywood Dad. Yes, I know that's a lot of titles, but it's his front cover. You can call it whatever you want. As a matter of fact, there's almost an entire chapter dedicated to naming the book, which is really important. But I can't even begin, Bruce, to talk about any of these things, your book, or your life, or your times, unless you answer the question that's probably been with me, for 20 years or so. Who was your favorite Much Music VJ?
It has to be Eric M., which is the name of on everyone's lips. In fact, we actually just did a Kids in the Hall skit recently where one of my characters wanted to make love to Eric M., so I've revealed myself way too much, way too early.
And so was I even in the running? Because I can't match that.
Well, you were in the top three. Oh. It was you. It was Erica, Steve Anthony, and then you. Is that pretty good?
That's pretty good. That's okay. Because otherwise I'd just shut it down and we could move on. So here's the deal. I need to know from the audience's standpoint and from my own. Let's Start a Riot. Is it a floor wax or a shampoo? Is it a book? Is it a theater piece? Is it a film? Is it a series? Is it a documentary? What is it?
It's everything. It's a youth quake. I actually had started writing these pieces for Calgary Swerve magazine, which is a really cool magazine. And then they sort of gained a little gravity, and I decided to do a one-person show in Toronto a couple years ago.
Based on those notes?
Yeah, and then sort of expanded that. And then out of that, publishers came to the show, and TV people came to the show as well. And they said, oh, this would be a good book, and this would be a good TV show. And both of those things ended up happening.
And where are we with the TV show? Are you shooting it now?
Yeah, I'm shooting it in Calgary. I finish my show tonight in St. Albert, get in the van, and go right to Calgary.
And then, so when that's done, then you'll edit it. It'll be a television series on the Knowledge Network?
It's going to be first on Rogers and then on CBC. So it will be on starting in January.
So everything is fodder. Everything you do, one way or another, can be marketed.
Yes, it's cottage industry. I'm actually selling my tears. They're $40 each. If anybody wants them, just get a hold of me.
If you would you put your head on that pillow here at the Hotel McDonald and I'll sell it?
Yes, we're in a man's hotel room and it seems like not a very appropriate place for an interview, but here I am.
Have you had any encounters here in the Hotel McDonald?
No, I had a hungover gentleman wanting to come to my show tonight, and I didn't really want to give him tickets, but I said I would anyway.
From here?
Yes, downstairs. I was having a coffee waiting for the appropriate time to come up to a gentleman's room.
All right, so now that we've got the favorite DJ out of the way and the floor wax is shampoo, I have seen with my own eyes Wayne Gretzky Boulevard, north and south, but I haven't found a Bruce McCullough crescent or anything. And you're from here. Is it a matter of time before this happens?
Well, no, there's actually a curb up on White Avenue where they stenciled my name, and that's where I'd had my head kicked in about 15 times as a young, dumb man. So I have a little curb with my little name on it.
Who put the name?
Some guy who stamped my head out last, I think, which was... And I haven't been beaten up, by the way, Terry, in probably 20 years.
It's chronicled in the book, is it not?
Oh, yes. I got many S-kickins, as we call it.
Mm. Were you looking for them?
I think I was. I went through a point in my life where I wanted to fight everyone until I realized I didn't have to do that. I could actually just create some things.
If you could make them laugh, you could maybe escape.
Yes, but I went through a phase where I thought it was appropriate to taunt cowboys because I didn't have any direction in my life.
And pink was what... I remember being at a rock and roll station, the Seafox in Vancouver, and the summer T-shirts came out. And everybody was looking forward to it because it was a free T-shirt. There were 5 pink T-shirts left in the bottom of the box. I said, well, we'll wear those. None of those guys would wear pink. And I never understood that. And you, why are you with pink?
Oh, I don't wear it much now, but as a young punk, I wore it a lot because it would infuriate the people that I didn't want to be like. So I certainly wore pink a lot. And nurse's shoes and stuff like that.
You're a family man now, are you not?
I am. I have two wonderful children, I think, and a wife, a pretty wife. So,
and they're chronicled in the book remarkably so. Some of them are very private. And here's the thing. Kids are a reflection of their parents. How are these kids?
They're weird little interesting beings, and they come out fully formed in their weird personalities. And my daughter is a little bit of me and a little bit of herself, and same with my son. But they're fun. They're fascinating.
Do they know that they're feeding the machine? That ideas will come from what they do?
Yeah, I mean, they're starting to understand. You know, there's the cover of my book is a guy who looks like my son, but not my son. And I have to tell my son it's because he's not funny enough. And he's funny enough to, he laughed really hard when I said that. So they know, I think they know that I tell stories about them. And my wife certainly does.
So just to review, there is no Bruce McCullough Crescent Drive, anything here yet.
No, but there really should be.
But it could be done if I could help in any way?
Well, if you could, I mean, we should do a startup. Isn't that what startups are for?
And where would it be? What part of town?
I think it would be probably in the seedy part of town.
Where was the hood?
Well, I went to Scona, Strathcona, when I was here. So somewhere near there, maybe the pool hall near there.
This is a wonderful read. I laughed out loud, which is fun to do on a plane. Let's start a riot. You weren't really a punk, though, were you? I mean, I know you wanted to be. You talk about punks and punk that, but... Really, were you a punk? Did you stud your face? Did you?
Oh no, I have a beautiful face, as you can see in front of you.
Cursed with it.
Yes, I am cursed with my beauty. I never did anything bad to my body. I never got any tattoos or piercings. People didn't really get piercings then. But I wore punk clothes, and I went to the only punk clubs that there were, in Calgary mostly. I was a punk, actually. But, of course, punk in the book also means that I'm, you know, over 50 now and still a punk. It's about the sensibility of that.
Well, see, Erica wasn't a punk. She didn't play punk.
I know, but did you look at her?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, of course. All right, fine. I get it.
You're third.
Well, okay, so let's talk music for just a moment. No. I have so many thoughts running through my mind. My whole... history is coming back to me, realizing that maybe I might have had, in the smallest way, an effect on you, because I wasn't playing Husker Du. I wasn't playing those bands. I was playing Journey and Foreigner and all those other bands. Did I help in your musical?
Absolutely. I actually remember, as a very young man, Great Canadian Gold Rush, where you used to play your music all the time. And I think you would play weird stuff. I want to say King Crimson or something like that, like weird stuff I had never heard of, because, of course, there was no internet then. There was no way to find people who were into culture that wasn't the same culture that was walking through the door, and you helped me with that, sir.
Do you remember me saying the words Throbbing Gristle?
Oh, I'm Throbbing Gristle and... Thunder Mug, and I think maybe even Hawkwind was in there.
You'd have to kill me first to play Hawkwind. I'm sorry. I know they're one of your favorite bands. Now, let's talk about family for a second, because it's beautifully chronicled in the book, Let's Start a Riot. You have three families, as you've documented. Let's go one at a time.
Well, the first family is the family that... Ian and June, that I was born into, my biological family, which was troubled, and they did their best, and I was like most of the kids I know, or the people I know, child of divorce, alcoholic father, they split up young. My second family is the boys, the kids in the hall, who were now middle-aged men together, and they certainly have been part of my life for almost 30 years now. And then, of course, the third one is the one that I've created with my pretty wife from Kitchener and two kids.
Okay, going backwards, I know they did divorce early. You shuttled for a while, and you went seeking, looking for answers, right? Did it ever get closure at some point?
Well, I don't know. It's closure. I mean, I raised myself, essentially. You know, I remember being 11 years old and, like, taking a sleeping bag and sleeping out by the railway tracks. Or when I was 13, I could gobble all the acid I wanted and go see, you know, Deep Purple on my own. And, you know, so I raised myself. So I think a lot of my life started kind of, you know, awkwardly because I didn't have anyone really around. It was just my friends, actually. And so it took a while, I think, till I became the person I needed to be.
And you were one of your best friends.
I was.
Your conversation that you were having with yourself.
Oh, yes. And I, you know, and that's a lot of what I, you know, I like to talk about in the book, and I like to talk about when I'm on stage now, is, you know, young people finding their place. Because, and even that's what's wonderful about having kids, is like you can talk to them about how to be in the world, because no one ever talked to me about that, and no one ever said, don't be an asshole. And so I think that's, you know, that's what's interesting to me a little bit now.
So Kids in the Hall, Second Family. You have this ongoing conversation when we see the Stones making plans to do something, or Led Zeppelin, you know, everybody wants a Led Zeppelin tour. When you look at those groups and you see, as a matter of fact, there's a picture of Ace Frehley from Kiss, and they say, he's actually 61 years of age or whatever it is. Do the same rules apply to Kids in the Hall? Can you not be funny when you're this age, and can you get better at what you do?
Well, I think we are pretty good. You know, we've done some live shows recently. We did some new material shows out of Toronto about a year ago, and out of that we did some shows in the States mostly, and we're pretty good. I think the thing for comedians, it's really important to try to be age appropriate and not try to, you know, mug the way you did when you were had the age of a 28-year-old or the face of a 28-year-old. I think now we write about slightly different stuff a little bit, but, you know, comedians, yeah, they don't probably age that gracefully all the time because they don't know where they fit in, you know?
And somewhere, at some point, the series is still running somewhere, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, the young Bruce McCullough is being irreverent or whatever it is I do somewhere, of course.
So in some hotel room somewhere recently, perhaps, you walked in, plunked a bag down, and turned on, and there you was?
Well, if I see my younger face on TV or something, it's kind of like running into an ex-girlfriend in the laundromat. It's kind of intriguing, like, oh, she's still kind of pretty and kind of weird, too.
What still holds up?
Well, you know, I think of myself as a writer, so I think the ideas hold up. You know, when people stop me on the street and they talk about like 30 Helens Agree, like how did I get that idea, or Love and Sausages, which was a weird long kind of art film that I had done for Kids in the Hall. It's like, it's weird that those ideas really still, I meet 20-year-olds who are still obsessed with those things.
And what are you listening to these days? I mean, I'm trying to get you to talk about music because I'd love to play. So what was your big band growing up? The one that you maybe even bought a t-shirt?
Well, it was certainly The Who. I mean, I was, you know, a young, angry man. So The Who really was probably the first band that I was so obsessed with that I almost couldn't leave my room. And I listened to Quadrophenia and devoured it.
Was Pete talking to you?
I don't know if he was. I don't know if the lyrics talked to me in the same way that the music did, or something about the energy and the weirdness.
My generation.
Yeah, but even like I didn't like Tommy, but I liked Quadrophenia. I was such an you know, such an a-hole. It was certainly The Who for a long time. And now I don't know how good they are. I think I just can't. And maybe because I'm old, the Stones, I just can't believe that they still are doing it, and they still have great songs on every record they do. So I've been quite interested in them for a long, long time.
Your favorite Beatle?
Well, I guess it's got to be Ringo. I mean, the guy just plays the drums, and he just plays it all the time the same, and he smiles, and he's happy to be there.
And he's still alive.
And he's still alive. So that's why he's my favorite.
Bruce McCullough, let's start to write the name of the book, the series, the stage event that's going to happen tonight, actually. Love. You talk a lot about love. You have a wonderful, over the years, a wonderful view of yourself as a ladies' man, which is different from love.
Yes. Well, probably a failed ladies' man. I mean, there's some stuff in the book, you know, I think certainly about my first love, and sort of the point I make in the book is that your first love sort of teaches you how to be in the world romantically, in the way that your family sort of trains you to be in the world a little bit without realizing it. And no, I know I do talk a little bit about love in the book. It's partially as well, which is truly my journey in life.
Could I say that you may be obsessed? There's a lot of love in there.
I may be obsessed, but I don't think I've ever talked about love before, right? In the book, I, you know, and it's not, you know, I don't think Lorne Michaels would be very happy with me talking about love, because he says, you know, comedians should be funny, you know, when they talk. And I think my book, my show is funny, but the notion of love is kind of interesting to me as an older person now.
Well, these are encounters. There's one real good love story. I love that. About that woman you ended up hugging. But encounters, failed encounters, awkward, incredibly awkward encounters, which is what I come to you for.
Right.
I want that awkwardness.
Yes.
Well, I want to feel badly.
Well, I'm not a perfect person. And, you know, when you add up the math of the mistakes you've made over your life, that, you know, the woman who woke up on the futon with you, you know, they can add up.
Was it therapy?
It was partially therapy.
This is a two-part question.
Yeah.
Is this therapy, just revealing all of these things? And two, doing another journalist interview. And two, was writing the book therapy for you?
Well, I think it was. I mean, it was really interesting to be able to kind of go back and look inside myself, you know, because I'd written a lot of TV pilots and movies and stuff recently in the States, and they were like, oh, a funny chef. And, you know, like, I'm not really a funny chef. And it was so interesting to kind of go back through, you know, even The Kids in the Hall or My First Love or how my family did stuff. And now that I'm kind of older and together, in a way, there's not like anger or something there. It feels like I can kind of use myself. I can do my own architecture or on myself, you know, and it's not creepy. It's interesting.
You're settled.
I think I'm settled. Yeah. I mean, I'm as obsessive, if not more obsessive than I've ever been.
But this could have turned horribly. You could have been just standing on that street corner where you got pummeled, reminding people as they go by who you were.
Oh, without question. I mean, I'm so lucky that, A, I found comedy, and I didn't end up, you know, no offense to people who are working in warehouses, but I thought I would end up, when I was 18 here in Edmonton, you know, end up working, you know, framed houses in Camrose. And, you know, I just thought I'd end up being one of those guys who was smarter than the life I had or smarter than the job I had.
And the rush of making people laugh?
Well, it really is the best thing.
It is the juice.
Well, and it's also, you know, it's greasy to think that you want to make people laugh, but I do, and I like to ride a laugh. But I think I like to communicate with people, and I like to be on stage as they're hearing my ideas.
Could you ride it as long as, say, Jack Benny?
You mean as many?
Well, I believe holds the record.
For a laugh?
A minute and 37 seconds.
Wow, that, I don't know what that, no, I think if you added up all the laughs I've ever gotten, it would be a minute and 37 seconds.
But I mean, you let the thought sail off, you push it offshore, and then you can actually then observe us, the intake of the breath,
right.
The heads going back. Yeah. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and I remember George Carlin used to always start a show for years. He would just come out and not say anything for a long time. And apparently, I never saw it, but I'd heard about it many times, that it was hilarious, and it went forever, right? Which I like. I like that. It goes way too long.
When you walk out on stage tonight, do you have any second thoughts, any little inner voices in there having at it, or can you not wait to get out there?
Well, I think I'm gentler now. Like, I used to want to really succeed.
Yeah.
Like, I'd really want to just nail it and just do great. And I think now I actually sit backstage in a chair for a minute, and I kind of remind myself why I'm here, why I get to do this, and how lucky I am to do it, which is not a very funny notion.
Do you think about coming full circle back to Edmonton?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's wonderful to come back here. You know, these were my punk times, and I was in high school here. You know, my mom had a heart attack here when I was on my 18th birthday. So these were some interesting times here, growing up with Callum Keith Rennie, who was my best friend at
Great
the time.
Guy.
And but I didn't start my comedy here, so it's always interesting to bring my comedy here, you know.
How did you get to hang with such a handsome, studly man like Callum Keith Rennie?
Well, he was in my high school.
But he was the most handsome guy in the entire universe.
I know, he was the most handsome guy in the world. He would just stand there and wait for girls to come buy him drinks.
So cool.
Yeah. He's the best. Yeah.
Is he still smoking?
He's still smoking.
God, I wish I could get him to stop smoking. No, okay, fine. Tell me about, from the book, Let's Start a Riot, Bruce, tell me about the jukebox test.
Well, the jukebox test is, you know, as a young man, you're dating several women or trying out different women, or they're trying out you, you take them to the jukebox and you plug in a couple dollars worth of quarters and see what they choose. And if they choose Stairway to Heaven, then you pick someone else. And if they pick the Buzzcocks or whatever, you know, you take them. But there was a story in the book of how I met my wife, and that we went to the jukebox and she played Journey and instead of playing the Buzzcocks, which I understand now is Journey's actually pretty good. Like, it's a guilty pleasure, and we don't have to be cool all the time. And so that's why it was interesting that she kind of failed my normal jukebox test, but she won.
Well, but it was a horrible date.
It was a terrible date.
And you stalked her with bread.
Yes, we went to see actually Radiohead, which is a band I've grown to sort of like. I don't know if they have songs really with titles. I guess they have songs with titles. But I'd gone, and it was not great because I was at the height of my fame then, and people go Bruce when I walked in, and it's like it wasn't fun to be on a first date with a woman who I thought I'd blown it with and ended up being my wife.
That was a nice reveal, actually. So if that was the height of your fame, where are you now?
I'm just a guy who's working. You know, I think, you know, when I first got, like, kind of successful, it was not good for me because I really did enjoy going to the bar on my own and playing the Tragically Hip on the jukebox or whatever. And it blew up, and I didn't like people who I didn't know coming up to me. And then now it's cooled off so slowly over time. You know, like the frog that's you turn off the stove, that the odd person comes up to me. So it's fine. And then now it just allows me to just do work.
I had a great question. It just disappeared. Into a fucking vacuum.
I could watch it. I watched it disappear.
Across something you said. Sorry. It's true then. Well, you haven't said the words, but really, I'll say them for you. So maybe I can draw you out. You're an old-fashioned guy.
I very am, much so am. And it's interesting. I think I've always been kind of old-fashioned. Like, I'm such a liberal and such a sort of a free thinker in a way, but also I'm kind of, and I think that's part of the book, too. It's like, oh, how did this weird guy who was into the weirdest stuff I could ever get my hands on in terms of culture or literature or whatever kind of, I don't have conservative politics or anything, but it's just like, oh, I like to wear my pajamas and have the same meal all the time and stay home, you know? But I am very much old-fashioned.
Was it easy to write, or was it cathartic?
It was hard and wonderful at the same time. Like, I would write it as all things in bursts and just follow. I didn't know what it was. Like, and you know, and that's the great part about anything you write is you don't know what it's going to be. You can, you know, I pitch shows all the time. I go to NBC and I sell a show and I say, it's going to be about this, this, and this. And then they go, oh, that sounds like a cool idea. Go write it. And then you go to write it and you go, what is it? Is it the thing I pitched? You can't really describe what it's going to be. And so writing a book, it's just like, oh, I'll write a book. I've always wanted to write a book. But then you don't know what it's going to be until you get there.
I think that's how Snakes on a Plane happened. What is it? It's Snakes on a Plane. Shoot it. Shoot it right now.
Yeah. No.
But
exactly.
Then after they finished shooting it in Vancouver, they wanted to rename it. The executives back at the studio said, oh, we can come up with a better name than that. And the actor stood up and said, it's called Snakes on a Fucking Plane. Do it. I mean, it's simple. It changed thinking, at least my thinking. Send me a thought directly, something I can completely understand and not miss.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because you want to know what a thing is. And you don't always know what it is, especially as an artist. You go, oh, it's the start of a riot. Could have been called anything.
Have you had time to go see Birdman yet?
I have not. But
God damn, you've got to go see it.
I've heard it's really, really
You're in there. Yeah. You're in there. That Birdman voice right. That's talking to him?
Right.
You're in there.
Oh, cool.
You have a Birdman voice.
Oh, I do. I have a clutter. I have a few radio stations in my head at all times.
What are you listening to currently, sir?
I've gone through a weird older phase. I've gone through, we play a lot of like Katy Perry and stuff around the house because yeah. I have young kids. But I think sort of in reaction to that, I've gone back through to a real country rock phase. I've gone through a Jayhawks and a Sunvolt phase. I'm doing a lot of that. And
any Blue Rodeo in there?
Not, you know, I'm more on the Skydiggers edge of those guys. And I went through a kind of a real sort of a period of listening to Bon Iver. Is it Bon Iver?
Bon Iver.
Yeah, and like really, really getting into that and Sufjan Stevens for a long time. I was.
They're soft and quiet and beautiful people.
They are kind of. And then now, because you know, in LA, there's no radio, there's no rock radio anymore. So you end up listening to new country because it's the only thing on it that on the air that isn't people yelling about politics.
Hmm. Well.
These notes.
You did a chapter on. I mean, we just finished Halloween. Yeah. It was a couple of nights ago. You talked about Halloween and its effect on you. Where were you Halloween? Were you out with your kids?
I was actually. I wish I had a great story. I was flying to Saskatoon.
Yes.
I was flying to Saskatoon. I had just left Whitehorse, where I did two shows. It was wonderful up there, and I was in the air. So we trick or treated on the plane. So not snakes on a plane, but trick-or-treating on a plane.
Did the kids understand? Because you know you're supposed to be out there with them.
I'm supposed to be out there with my kids. No, my son actually has a great sense of humor. He dressed as a rat this year because I always call him Rat Fink as his name. So.
And your daughter?
She went as...
Not as a princess?
No, she went as a mad scientist, which I thought was pretty
cool. Had you gone, what would you have dressed as?
I think I would have gone as the year 1963.
Okay. And... Very good. That's a good year. Have you been the guy, the dad at the house, handing out the candy?
Yes, but we live in the Hollywood Hills, and no one comes to our house. One year, we had two beautiful princesses come, and they just came. We gave them candy. And then every year since then, we think that someone's going to come, and they don't.
So, it's unfortunate, but you may have to go to another community. But you did make a nice point, and I like this. When Halloween went sideways, when all of a sudden it was like freaking razor blades and apples and stuff, and it was horrible. People, you know, you're dumping all the candy on the floor to see what people had given your kids, right? Do you think we're past that? Have we gone? Is this a good Halloween now?
Well, no, people are so into Halloween now. I was watching like TV, and everybody dresses up on every show and stuff. Yeah, I was remembering when I was a like not when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, they were even talking about canceling Halloween because there was so much bad stuff going on. And I don't think people in the bars and that and were going out for nights like they do now.
I just had a thought. What was it like when Dave's I Know, when we played Dave's I Know like it was Madonna on Much Music? Like we played it every 12 minutes. What was the effect on you?
Well, it was weird because I think... Like, it's a kind of a funny song in a way, and it's got weird... It's got my sense of humor in it, but it's like, it was enough already. And I remember that was the sort of the dumb phase of my life where, like, I got all kinds of record companies wanting to put that out. And I thought, no, I'm not doing that. And then when I later did a record for Atlantic, I said, well, I'm not putting the Dave's I Know on it. And then I eventually... listen to the Dave's I Know, and I thought, oh, that's a pretty cool song, and I put it on. So it was, I didn't understand that it was fine to have a little bit of success.
So then the highlight of your young life would have been Erica introducing Dave's I Know.
Probably, or in second place, Steve Anthony, in third place, you do.
Much West, okay, fine. Great, great, great. Well, we're getting somewhere. There's some progress. Okay, so let's review, if we can. It's a book. It's a television series soon to be released, somewhere down the way, and it's a stage show.
Yes. It's me talking about my thoughts in my brain and my stories of my life.
And you get paid for this?
I get paid handsomely. I used to get paid in food, but now I insist they actually pay me in money.
Are you staggeringly rich? Could you buy this hotel?
No, we're in a nice hotel. I may be able to buy like a Super 8 hotel. And then run it with me and my pretty wife. No, I do fine. I don't have to worry about money, but I'm not rich. People on TV are not rich.
Can we then play leave with a couple of tunes that your whole family would dance around the kitchen to?
Yeah.
I'm not playing Katy Perry.
How about Here I Go Again on My Own, Going Down the Only Road I've Ever Known by Whitesnake. That is one of my, that is a song I actually hum to myself in my head.
I don't think I'll play that one.
No,
but
you're playing
that one. All right. Okay.
Something really artsy and wonderful.
Something really artsy and wonderful. How about Nico Case?
Of course.
Yes. I was just talking to Brian Connolly, my guitarist, on the plane for 1 hour straight about how amazing her songwriting and her voice.
Voice is.
Yeah, she is unbelievable.
Great storyteller. Yeah. So you have a guitarist on stage. Are you singing?
I do sing the odd little songs, and I even say to the sound guy, don't put reverb on my voice. I don't want to fancy up this ugly voice.
Do you do the poems as well?
I do a couple poems as well, yeah.
So I just, a complete package.
I just kind of lay it down is what I do.
So, Bruce, let me ask you about wine, you and wine, because yeah. This is Tasty Room Radio. And at some point, we have to talk about food and wine.
Yes.
It was a wine show until I realized that you can't talk about wine if you don't talk about food. So, were you a wino at some point? Did you have like Ripple jugs during your formative years?
Well, my first wine encounters were with wine skins as a young man.
I'm sorry?
A wine skin, which is a skin, oh, yeah, okay. skin that they actually yeah. squeeze. And, of course, the first drinking I did was Baby Duck as a young man before I started stealing my daddy's rye. So at first, and I think Blue Nun was in there too.
Of course it was.
It got a little bit older. So I didn't realize that actually wine tasted good probably until my late 20s when we would be taken out for dinner for the kids in the hall, and then you would just point to the $100 bottle of wine and no one would stop you and you would have the good stuff. But of course, I've lived in California now for many, many years where they have unbelievable
Vast quantities
of...
Like if you walk into a Whole Foods, is it an entire wall of wine?
Yes, and for $6, you can get amazing wine. So I think that's when I've sort of enjoyed.
What are you drinking as a family?
I like red, and anything from the Russian River Valley.
Big reds.
Yeah, is for some reason... And whites, for some reason, Russian River Valley, we always go out to restaurants. Anything from there is fantastic.
Have you gone to the Russian River?
We haven't. I don't know. I'm scared to go to there because I think it might be too nice and I'll want to stay.
Well, that's possible.
Yeah. But we drink a lot of Pinots around the house, you know, a lot of that kind of stuff.
What whites?
Again, Chardonnay.
Oaky shards.
Yeah, I'm kind of... You know, it's sort of the cheeseburger of wines, as it were, that I like the big ones. Because sometimes I will be sent actually a nice bottle of wine,
yeah.
And there's no there.
Okay. Have you had any Canadian wines?
I have had, I think the ice wines are excellent. I've had some of the ice wines.
That's it?
That's really it, yeah. But I've been out of the country for a long time. I've come back to Edmonton to be on a wine tour is why I'm here. So I'm going to go downstairs and have a tasting now.
Very good.
Yeah.
So beyond the book and the series and the stage show, down the road, will I get a press release announcing your next project?
Well, I'm planning to have a heart attack, and then they'll give me a day off. That's what they say.
Just one day.
Just one day if I have a heart attack.
And you'll rely on your Canadian medical.
Yes, of course. No, I'm just doing this, hoping to do, you know, Kids in the Hall. We've done some stuff recently. We're hoping to do some more touring. But in general, this is sort of consuming me now.
Thank you very much. Do you have a podcast or a website we can send people to?
There is. I have a website that I just rebooted recently called brucio.com.
Brucio?
Yes. Well, there'll be pictures that I took and everything like that.
And any backstage musings?
Just pictures of us getting ready and putting on our wigs and our girdles, as it were.
All right, fine. It's a nice life you've created for yourself, and you should be very proud of it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
From the hotel of McDonald Room 301, Bruce McCullough, How a Young Drunk Punk Became a Hollywood Dad. Let's Start a Riot, the name of the book. It's a great read. Slowly introduce it to your children. This is Tasty Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Mulligan Stew on CKUA.